Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are going to be talking around some of the trends in the world of investing, and quite possibly the economy, because what happens in the investment world is sometimes can be seen as an extension of what's going on in the economy. And to help us to unpack the issues, especially around ESG investing, we're going to be talking to Kingsley Williams, who is the CIO, or the Chief Investment Officer, at Satrix. Kingsley, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mdiwa.
I think a good place for us to start is when it comes to Satrix in the world of investing in South Africa. We for the large part understand what Satrix is. I mean, there are some famous EFTs out there, the Satrix Top 40, and all of that. But, you know, for someone who's not quite familiar with Satrix, could you maybe give us a brief introduction to the organization?
Sure. Thanks, Mdiwa. Satrix is an investment manager, an asset manager. But the way in which we provide our value add to clients is through tracking a variety of indices. So what is an index? An index is really a measure of what the stock market is doing, whether that be the JSE locally, or a subset of the JSE, like a particular sector such as resources or financials. We've got ETFs that track those sector indices as well. But importantly, it's not just offering exposure to indices locally, but globally as well. And over the last 4 or 5 years, we've launched a range of global investment strategies in both ETF form as well as through unit trusts. So there's quite a wide range of investment strategies that we offer, tracking individual stock exchanges, tracking broad market indices, and then over and above that, we've also got a what we call balanced funds or multi-asset class portfolios, which really provide a one-stop shop solution for clients looking for a well-diversified portfolio which incorporates a lot of the different asset classes that clients might want exposure to, whether that's bonds, listed property, equities, cash, etc.
So when it comes to the issue of ESG, I think, you know, for the listeners that don't particularly know this, we're talking about considerations around environmental, social, and governance issues. As Satrix, what's your interest when it comes to ESG investing?
So I think the first point to make, Mdiwa, is that there has been growing interest and concern amongst investors regarding issues beyond just the financial bottom line of companies. And this is really what ESG and the broader sustainable investing movement really prioritizes. So it's looking at issues that affect the stakeholders of a company beyond just the financial metrics from a shareholder perspective. So if we look at it from a governance perspective, you know, that's really important to take account of the governance and the risk framework that a company operates within. Because if that is not in place, and we've had a few examples of that over the last few years, even in our local market, where governance principles have not been properly adhered to. And the risk for investors is that, you know, that can really result in material destruction of value over the long term. So governance is very important as a long-term means to sustainable returns and profits that companies deliver to their shareholders. But beyond that, there's an increasing awareness of the environmental impact that companies have, as well as the social impact that companies have. So these terms might be new to investors, but one way of sort of encapsulating all of them is to talk to this concept of what we call externalities. And these are really the issues outside of the profits that get delivered, what are the costs associated with delivering those profits? And once those are accounted for, are the companies actually still adding value within the environment they operate within, or within the community they operate within? Or are they in fact incurring additional unaccounted for costs in delivering the profits to their shareholders?
You know, a few years ago, when I was in business school, we had, I'm now reflecting because of this conversation, because at the time, right, the thrust of any business school, you know, everyone has, you know, certain themes, etc. And I went to Rhodes, and so at Rhodes Business School, the motto or the theme is leadership for sustainability. So almost everything we did was around sustainability, and that was 5-6 years ago. And in my head, at the time, we understood what the vision was, but it sort of seems as if now I'm thinking, oh, these guys are actually ahead of their time, because now it seems everything, you know, people are really talking about these issues. But in that, is there a difference then between sustainability versus what people call ESG?
I would say that sustainability is the broader theme, and ESG is one subset or expression of that sustainability broad theme. So other themes within that sustainability framework would be, you know, SRI or values-based investing, and you can think of, you know, Sharia-type investing and Sharia funds as an expression of that. So the second area within sustainable investing is known as impact investing, and that really tries to achieve a specific positive impact in the community or the environment within which that business endeavor is being pursued. You know, whether it's about bringing fresh water or clean water, education, clean energy, etc. There's a specific positive impact that's trying to be achieved in, you know, in conjunction with providing a particular service to that community. And then the final sort of theme within sustainable investing, which I think is a very important one, and one which is increasingly becoming a standard and a hygiene factor amongst all investors, and it's what we call active ownership and stewardship. And what this refers to is the role investment managers, which are professional investment managers, play as stewards of end investors' capital and savings. And it really talks to making sure that they express a strong view from a sustainability perspective when it comes to proxy voting. So this is when a company has an annual general meeting and certain issues are put up for vote, which could relate primarily to governance issues, but could also touch on environmental and social issues as well. So it's making sure that those issues are, you know, that a strong stance is being taken on those issues. And over and above the proxy voting, increasingly, investment managers are engaging with the companies that they hold within their portfolios to proactively and constructively bring about positive change in areas where they see weaknesses.
The other piece that I'm trying to understand then is, so as Satrix, could you maybe then talk to us about why you guys have decided that you're going to focus, you know, on the areas of focus that you have, you know, given the fact that you've just explained to us that sustainability is this broad umbrella, and then there are these different facets underneath it. Are you guys sort of following the, I guess, I don't know, is this where the trends are going in terms of investing? Is that what you're seeing around the world? Or have you made it sort of a concerted decision to say, okay, fine, this seems to be a piece that we can tackle?
So within Satrix and within the broader Sanlam Investments business that Satrix operates within, sustainability is now a core pillar of strategic focus for us. And some of the aspects of sustainable investing that I've just mentioned are being pursued across the business, and not just one of them, but multiple subsets of that sustainability umbrella. So the active ownership and stewardship component would apply across the board to all of our funds. So any shares and companies we hold in our portfolios, whether that portfolio is ESG focused or not, would still benefit from the active ownership and stewardship from a proxy voting and engagement perspective. And that's why I say it's increasingly becoming almost a minimum requirement. You know, all investors need to be doing this, and there's an increased focus on that being done. So what I mean by that is not just voting with management on the policies they put up to vote or siding with management as a shareholder, but, you know, actively engaging with them, particularly where there are areas of concern. And that requires research and insights into the companies that you're holding within your portfolios. Even as an index investment manager, which, you know, we don't typically take fundamental views on the companies we hold because our mandate is to track whichever given index is the benchmark for that particular fund. But over and above that, then we do have some other funds that we manage and which we've recently launched, particularly in the global space, which are specifically ESG focused. So what that means is when we talk about ESG, it means really two things. One is, are you screening out certain companies which you wouldn't really want to hold in a portfolio that has the ESG label on it? And by that, I mean companies that might be involved in manufacturing controversial weapons. What are controversial weapons? Well, that would be cluster munitions like cluster bombs and landmines or biological and chemical weapons. You know, you can very easily see these are not good things to have in a society. Similarly, companies involved in the manufacture of nuclear weapons, and we're all very aware of, you know, the profound impact that a nuclear bomb can cause wherever that might be set off. And then there's other things like United Nations. There's a thing called the United Nations Global Compact, and really it talks to human rights, labor rights, a focus on the environment, as well as anti-corruption. And again, the corruption is a very topical issue in our own economy over the last few years. And then other areas of focus would be things like producers of thermal coal and oil sands, also known as fracking, producers and sellers of civilian firearms, tobacco producers, etc. So, you know, these would be obvious companies that you wouldn't necessarily want in an ESG portfolio because these are seen as controversial issues and not seen as sort of good capitalism. You know, companies providing these services are not really seen as providing a good service to the overall broader society. But then once you've filtered those companies out, then you're faced with the challenge of within the remaining companies that aren't necessarily violating any of those categories that I mentioned earlier. You have a rating of which companies are doing really well from an ESG perspective, and that could be, you know, how are they managing the ESG risks of, facing their company, and some companies do really well at that, other companies don't do as well. I'll give an example. If you have a look at tech companies, have a look at, you know, your Microsofts and your Facebooks, for example, also Alphabet, which is, you know, Google. Some of those companies have better track records at protecting their clients' data and the security around it. And this really talks to, you know, the social dynamic that gets scored and evaluated in the ESG. Whereas other companies in that space have less of a stellar track record in protecting their clients' data.
Yeah.
And so you can start evaluating these companies on these different dimensions, environmental, social, and governance, and rating them accordingly. And then the decision comes, well, how do you construct your portfolio to take account of this information? Do you exclude companies that score lowly, or do you just underweight them? And how much do you overweight companies that are doing well from an ESG perspective? So this is really the strategy that we've, you know, the strategy we've brought to market last year, offering global exposure to MSCI World as well as MSCI Emerging Markets, so the full global investment universe, but adopting an ESG approach within those strategies. And I can elaborate more on what those strategies do.
You know, as you're talking, I'm now thinking about, you know, from the company point of view, because, you know, you've articulated, you know, very well, you know, the considerations from an investor point of view and the way that now you're thinking about constructing your funds. But I'm now thinking that if I'm a company, right, am I thinking about ESG as simply a tick box exercise? Because I feel like when it comes to some of these things, it's very easy for it to become a simple tick box exercise, especially from a company's point of view. Okay, investors are now looking at ESG scores. What can we do to up our scores? Okay, fine, let's go tick all the boxes, right? Or do you find that it's actually changing the way that companies are approaching the way that they actually do business and therefore their investment case? Because like you said, you guys at Satrix don't take a fundamental view, because, you know, other asset managers and institutional investors will take a very active role and, you know, put pressure on company boards and managements, you know, to be like, no, you guys need to up this, you need to up that. But, you know, I guess, you know, how are you seeing all of that entire spectrum of things?
Yeah, I mean, it hinges on ESG research. Very, you know, the quality of the ESG research that you do is a significant underpin to the insights that you're going to be able to get on whether these companies are materially focusing on these issues or just giving it lip service. And, you know, that's going to hinge largely on the quality of your ESG research that you either do yourself or procure from a third party. And there are quite a few ESG research providers globally that do this work, and they have got hundreds of analysts around the world, which are ESG specialists within particular industries and can interrogate the financial reports that companies issue, as well as engaging with those companies to get clarity on what their ESG policies are across various dimensions and being able to rate them accordingly. So I think companies that follow a tick box kind of, the other term perhaps used in the environmental space is what we call greenwashing. You know, if they're paying lip service to these issues, the reality is that those controls and policies and risk mitigating actions will eventually come to light, because, you know, a controversy might occur. Take, for example, the VW Dieselgate controversy a few years ago. You know, if for example, that company had been saying, you know, we very much have a strong governance framework, and also we're very pro making a difference on the environment, you know, then that shouldn't have resulted in what then occurred with the Dieselgate scandal and, the cheat mechanisms that were introduced into the vehicles to bypass the emissions regulations and standards. So, yeah, companies may be able to hide behind, just going through a tick box exercise, but I think that will eventually come out in the wash and will be revealed. And I think there's increasingly a lot more scrutiny on these issues, which would make that a very risky strategy for any company to adopt, to say we do one, to say they do one thing, but actually do another.
On the side of, the trends and who's actually taking this stuff seriously and, you know, who's actually interrogating the integrity of all of these strategies that companies have in place, I think an easy question then to ask is there are usually two types of investors in the market, the retail investors and the institutional investors. So, you know, for the benefit of our listeners, you started off the conversation talking about how this is becoming more and more of a consideration on the side of investors. Do you see retail investors also thinking about or looking at these things? Because usually it's the institutional investors that have the resources to go out and actually research about all of these things and, you know, actually put manpower. If I'm just an ordinary person and I've got my share trading account, how much am I really thinking about the environmental, social, governance impact of a company?
I would say, Madiwa, that investors are increasingly becoming aware of whether companies are reflective of their values and the investments that they're making, whether those are aligned with their values. I do take your point, though, that, you know, for a retail investor buying and selling their own shares, to have the research tools at their disposal to interrogate ESG issues is going to be very difficult because there's just such an enormous amount of data available and it costs money to get access to that research. I mean, this is why, you know, asset managers really have a role to play here in driving this forward. And we've, at Satrix, have certainly had interest from direct retail investors asking about ESG funds that we have available. You know, what do we have available in that space? And so that is part of the reason why we have brought these ETFs to market, to give those investors who are, you know, who are concerned about the values underlying the investments they're making and that there's alignment with their values, to make sure that there's a viable option. But yes, I would say that it's not going to be that easy for a retail investor who's buying and selling shares themselves, to implement this in their own portfolios. But that doesn't mean that retail investors can't demand that the funds they invest in, which are managed by professional asset managers, you know, why those funds shouldn't adopt these principles in their investment strategy.
Now, one of the big reasons, you know, I guess following on from the point that, you know, that whole point of the role of asset managers is the fact that some of these funds, you do take time to offload the work that an investor would do, you know, is done by an asset manager, the research, all of that stuff. So against that backdrop then, when it comes to the options, right, I'm sort of now, as we're rounding up the discussion, trying to take it from, you know, the theoretical base that we've established into the practical world to say, when it comes to options that you guys have brought online in terms of some of the funds that you have that have to do with ESG, can you give us, you know, some insight into some of them maybe and, you know, some of the options that actually are available and how you guys have actually constructed these things?
Yeah, so as I alluded to earlier, the two funds we've got, or the two ETFs we've got, which are ESG focused, one is based on MSCI World, which is a developed market index, so all of your so-called first world economies around the world. And the other one is an emerging markets index, of which South Africa would form a part of. Now, both of these ESG strategies, very importantly, manage the issue that investors are often faced with, which is an opportunity cost problem. When investors want to adopt an ESG strategy, I guess they've always got one eye on what they might be missing out on by adopting such a strategy versus having exposure to, say, the broad market index like an MSCI World or emerging markets, for example. So what these strategies specifically do is manage that risk by making sure that although you're adopting an ESG strategy, you're explicitly controlling for the risk relative to your parent index or your broad market index in the process. And over and above that, these two indices and the ETFs that track them also aim to specifically reduce carbon intensity and emissions by at least 30%. So Why that's important is because just adopting an ESG approach to your investment strategy doesn't necessarily make a difference from a carbon emissions perspective and reducing carbon intensity, even though you might be focusing on ESG issues. So over and above focusing on ESG, these strategies also reduce carbon intensity by at least 30%. And yeah. Then, as I mentioned, they do that within a very tight risk budget so that you get the same return experience that you would get from a broad MSCI World or Emerging Markets Index.
As we round up, I think one of the big questions that anyone listening to this, especially, someone who's actually thinking about how to deploy their funds, whether retail, institutional, whatever, is how has or is the actual performance, right? Companies that are scoring high on ESG, how is their performance relative to the broader market?
Yeah, there's been a lot of research in that space and, a lot of debate around whether ESG does contribute to performance or not. Some research suggests that it does, and it certainly helps to mitigate long-term risks, which would result in underperformance if you weren't taking account of ESG. But other research suggests the jury's out on that. So what our strategy specifically aim to do is to minimize that risk of a big performance deviation, because it keeps what we call the tracking error very low relative to the parent index. So, whether ESG is going to lead to outperformance or not, you might have differing views on that. But the point is if you believe these are important values to incorporate into your portfolio, you don't need to worry about that performance risk because that is controlled for in the design of our strategies.
Okay, cool. So that's been it. I think my last question is just around, where do you see things going? Just your outlook, because we're talking about ESG now, so do you think this is a fad? Is it a trend? Is it something that's going to be long term? Something that we're just going to see developing over time and, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, this will be something that would be more developed or something that, like other trends, will fall off at some point.
Yeah, that's a great question, Madiwa, because, one of the, points that I talked to was actually made by the CEO of Schroders, and he likened the introduction of financial standards and GAAP accounting standards post the Great Depression, to the way that ESG is now being introduced to looking at companies and valuing companies today. And, back then, everyone thought that would be the end of capitalism by introducing accounting standards, but obviously the very opposite has happened, and I think similarly by introducing ESG now, this is not a fad. It's going to become more mainstream. Investors are increasingly demanding disclosure of these issues to know what they're holding and what the risks are within their portfolio. So this is very much part of a long-term megatrend theme that is unfolding and will become more and more mainstream as investors get comfortable with it.
A long-term megatrend that is ongoing and that is coming. That was us with Kingsley Williams, who is the CIO at Satrix, giving us some insight into the world of ESG investing. That's where people are taking into consideration sustainability issues. He explains to say that sustainability or the impact of a company on the broader society or the economy is the broader topic. But underneath it, we have issues of the environment, social, and governance impact, which are becoming more and more for consideration for investors around the world. He actually says that in the same way that we saw the introduction of accounting standards after the Great Depression, this is something that is likely to be with us for a long time to come. Whether that's going to lead to outperformance is something that will only be seen over time, but he's saying that this this is something that's surely important. And over time, the companies that do decide that they're just going to take this on as a tick box exercise, he just says that over time, we will be able as investors to just see, you know, through some of these strategies. So better to have some sustainable strategies in place. So that's been it. Kingsley, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Madiwa. Thank you for the opportunity to engage with you and your listeners.
This is Madiwa's Tech.
Quite a cool discussion with Kingsley just around what's going on in the ESG space. And as I said, I was relating my experience in my final years at university, and there was a very big push on sustainability from the side of Rhodes Business School. And now that we've reached this stage where a lot of investors are really caring about ESG matters, it kind of feels like a lot of the stuff that we were learning back then was sort of ahead of the curve, because we were looking at sustainability broadly, you know, including all of the ESG things. So it's really good to see that the world is catching up to all of these issues, because sustainability is important. And when we say sustainability, we're talking about the total impact of a business, or how do you create business models that can work into the future whilst at the same time ensuring that there is a win-win approach for both, you know, the greater society within which a business operates in, but at the same time having minimal environmental impact, you know, which is a win for the environment, but at the same time making sure that you are dealing with employee wellness issues, you're dealing with governance, you're dealing with things on a holistic level, all the things that we consider in our society as trash, all the things that we think about as abuse, inhumane labor conditions, bad working environments, all of this stuff, right, just lends itself to being unsustainable. So anything that lends itself to being sustainable is a good thing. Now, what will be interesting over time is seeing how ESG-focused companies are able to perform relative to the broader market, because as much as this is becoming a trend, it's not something that has been adopted by all companies. And at the same time, there are a lot of quote-unquote dirty industries that are still, I guess, crucial to our day-to-day existence. How are we going to clean some of those things up? And hopefully, as more and more money gets piled into or plowed into ESG-related matters, companies will take it seriously. And when I say take it seriously, beyond being a tick box exercise, doing things that actually work for the good of the society, for the good of the environment, at the same time with the highest levels of corporate governance and standards, all being encapsulated in all of those philosophies. So good thing over time, but it would be really interesting to see how such companies will be able to perform over time relative to the broader market. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So, for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.